So I'll do an advertisement for tomorrow. Tomorrow we will be covering, I think I'll talk about the elements, the other elements. We talked about the air element, but there's water and earth and fire. And how to use those elements, those natural elements, just again, in the same way that we can use the air element, the breath. These are the elements of our common human interaction with nature. That's how we experience it directly, through the solidity of the earth, the warmth, fire of the sun, and the fire that we sit in front of, and so forth. And the water element, this, the waves, the ocean, the lakes, the rivers, the rain, the glass of water we drink, the feeling of the sun on our face. These are not often talked about in, I think, in analytical types of retreats, Vipassana retreats, but the elements serenity objects, not only to say that your body is made of the four elements, that's good, but we can use it in different ways than other ways. And also I'll talk about the emotional, four sublime abidings, the divine emotions of love and compassion, sympathetic joy and equanimity. Notice when I said compassion, the child screamed. Another synchronicity. It ain't easy being alive. So that's the teaser for tomorrow. And so if anybody has any questions, feel free. They can be general questions about Dhamma. They can be questions about anything. They can be thinly disguised problems in your own life. I know a woman who has this. A friend of mine once said that that kind of thing is good. I mean, this is what Dhamma is about, is your life. Like the issue with your neighbors or this thing you're going through and stuff like that. This is also quite wonderful stuff. This is not somehow beside the point, you know. Yes, there.
Yes, on that note, a question again about what is the remedy, as you were describing the hindrances, what is the remedy for desire?
Desire is that you have to remove the beautiful. What you're adding something, you're adding oil to the surface of the water, and it's distorting with beauty. So the opposite of that would be the awareness of the unbeautiful, the other side of, like, the glorious gleaming jaguar that you want. Car, not a thing, you know. Jaguar. And then you got to think, in order to not buy the thing, you have to think, now how am I going to make the payments on this? And what do I have to do at my job at the mill for the next 30 years to play for the Jaguar? Like, that's a reflection on the not beautiful. We, you know, just think in your life how many times you, especially as a child, you know, it's just the next brilliant purple and blue toy that you want, and you promise your mother you'll be happy forever if she'll just get it for you, and then 2 weeks later, you've gone back on your promise and you want another toy, you know. And then your mother says, you know, remember the last toy you said that? You said you'd be happy forever. And then where is that toy? Is it in your closet? You haven't even looked at it for. So we have to, desire is unwise attention to the beautiful. It's not that we don't recognize the beautiful or the fault in things. We should. But don't you notice that some you lucidly look at these things without unwisely emotionally distorting them. You can see, oh, isn't that a beautiful pie? But, you know, you're not going to rush in there and eat the whole thing. It's just like, you appreciate the craftsmanship of it or the art of it. And you see that, oh, that tree in the backyard, it's starting to go on us, so we're going to have to cut that down. But it's lucidly observed with equanimity or, you know, clarity. So emotions like loving kindness can help us actually evaluate the fault and the beautiful with wisdom. We can, if a mother loves her child, she sees its faults and its good points, but she's not, nevertheless, has goodwill towards it. So if it's got something stuck on the side of its face, she just gets the tissue and licks it and then wipes it off the... And it's not a big deal for her. It's just what you do, you know. There's no loss of affection for the child or anything like that. And, of course, when we're caring for each other, if we're sick, sometimes it's not pretty. But nevertheless, we do this with love. And and graciousness. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, replacing. So replacement is, you've got a variety. So I've been getting this down and down. I mean, it takes me decades to get it down to like a few words. I've been reading this stuff. There is a sutta called Five Methods for Removing Distracting Thoughts, the Vitaka Santana Sutta. And, it's come to my attention that often books and teachers will sort of present meditation as a kind of just a watching of things rise and pass away. But you have some very clear and constantly repeated teachings by the Buddha that there's methods which you are to employ to actually get rid of things, hindrances, and to maintain the other ones. So it's just very proactive, lots of effort involved in this. It's not just watching. And so I try to summarize this five methods by just giving you two quick ones that you have at your disposal. Dismiss, replace. Dismiss, replace. Now the replace with what? Well, one option, quite reasonable option. So here is five topics that the Buddha would send a young monk off to the forest with. Remember, they don't read at that time. You don't give them a book. Go off and you got about 10 minutes to tell a young fellow whose memory is not that good, doesn't quite understand what you're talking about, and he's going to go off. He's in the robes now, and he's going to go off, and he's going to be under a tree somewhere, 50 yards away, and most of the time he's going to spend alone without distraction. So the Buddha's going to say, here's five things you can take with you, because this is what you're going to encounter when you are face to face with yourself. So first of all, you're going to have your mind is going to think too much. You're going to discourse with yourself. You're going to have a conversation going on in your head, and it's going to go all over the map. It's all kind of crazy stuff. It's never going to stop. So what would you do for that? How would you replace that? Here is a subject, the breath. The breath is a means for replacing excessive discursive thought. Then you're going to start thinking of your old girlfriends. Even the ones that you thought they were your girlfriends, but they never looked at you. But anyway, that's lust. Now you're going to have to replace the lust. If you can't dismiss that, then you're going to have to replace that with, you can replace that with asubha, the unbeautiful aspects. So you're going to have to remember your girlfriend with all of the other parts and aspects of a human being. So that's to help you with that. Maybe it could be lust for a human, but it could be wanting a big house and everything, and you have to remember how much time it takes to clean a house, and you got to worry about a house and getting the insurance on a house, and then it burns down and on and on. So these are replacement things. And then there is you need then there's going to be ill will. You know, the birds are making too much noise and stuff, and that stream just never stops babbling away, and then you start remembering old arguments you had there, you know, 10 years ago, and so this is where loving kindness comes in. Metta is the replacement for that. And then so we're talking kind of opposites, and then this is just one of option for replacement opposites of the hindrances, opposites. Then you would need a topic for reflection, which aids all of the, it'll substitute. It's like what do they call those? A joker in a deck, you know, kind of functions as any card. A wild card, yeah. Yeah, like I don't play cards, so. Anicca is impermanence, and Anicca is kind of like, it's kind of like the ultimate weed remover. It'll remove any kind, because it's like boiling water. So if you pour boiling water on any weed, then it works on all weeds. Anicca diffuses grasping and excess, you know, so you're mad now, but you think, in a year, I won't even remember this stuff. How many arguments and temper tantrums that I had, you know, and I now it's, they're all gone. I just like, and this one will go too, and same with desire, and this will pass too, and this will pass. So that's the famous story. A king wanted advice to help him deal with every situation, and a wise man came and gave him a little sign, and it said, "This too shall pass." So that's a story from India. It ended up on Abraham Lincoln's desk during the Civil War. Probably quite helpful. So, this too shall pass. And so Anicca is your insight topic. That's your bona fide Vipassana topic, Anicca. But it's also a counteractive replacement for all obsessions and distractions. So doubt, again, is the opposite of doubt is faith. Trust, at least go back to some sort of conviction that you, you know, so the examination of the reality of that there is suffering. That's something you can confirm in your own direct experience in life. You can confirm some of these truths that whatever you like, it produces a certain amount of anxiety in you, because you can lose it, and you have lost things, and you might lose things, and there's a certain level of stress in the uncertainty of life. So these are replacement topics for things. Those are some examples of the first two methods for dismissing the hindrances and replacing the hindrances. There are other ways as well. But I like to, well, if I give you all five and everything, you know, five of this and five of that, and what if it was multiplies up to like 125, and what was, it was only one afternoon. So, so just, if you can just have two, like just, okay, go away, you know, just dismiss. And lots of people, it never occurs to dismiss something going on in your head. Just like, okay, cut it out. Just stop it. You don't have to get into anything more than that. It's like, go. You know, if a stray dog wanders in, you know, you don't have to get into long explanations with them. So that's the idea of dismiss and replace, yeah. Here's an interesting teaching. It's by Ajahn Sumedho, and it's a nice nuanced teaching. And he often would tell the monks, especially Western monks, and he would kind of almost contradict the Buddha, and he would say, like, okay, when you feel angry, know it, just feel it. And, you know, I was there, I was probably had four rains. Ajahn Sumedho came to the Thailand one time, and just near the, for I think it was Ajahn Chah's funeral. So I hadn't met him before. I went to talk to him, or went to hear some Dhamma talks, and he said, you know, with anger, you know, just hold it, feel it, and everything. And then I thought, that's not in the suttas. And then I went to see him later, and I said, now, did you, so what do you do with desire? He said, dismiss it. And I thought, I thought he was going to say, hang on to it. So he tricked me. And he says, anger, yeah, you can hold on to that because it's very unpleasant. So you get to realize just how unpleasant the thing is. It's painful. You don't want this thing. So it's not like you are going to enjoy it and nurse it. You can't. It's not possible to enjoy anger. It's always arises with an unpleasant feeling tone associated with it. The only thing it's pleasant compared to is extreme depression. There's only one thing worse than anger, and that's being half dead with beyond caring. That's the only thing worse, and it might do you well to get a little angry instead of just lie there like a blob. But it doesn't mean that anger feels good. It just feels better than the worst thing you can imagine. Almost virtually everything else feels better than that. Anger's burns you. Anger, so the simile the Buddha says, anger is a stick. On one end, it's burning. The other end is covered with filth. Which one do you want? Why don't you not pick it up to begin with? So you're gonna pick it up to hit somebody, and it's on fire on one end, covered with filth on the other. Do you really want to pick the stick up? I don't think so. So Ajahn Sumedho is just kind of playing a little bit with psychology. Get to know, you know, don't just take the word of the Buddha about anger. Feel it, and you will soon know that you really want to dismiss this right away. Get rid of it. Even if you've been done wrong, you know, you've been done wrong. How does it feel? You've already been done wrong. Now, your worst enemy would just love it if they knew you were suffering again for the whole thing. You know, do you want to please your worst enemy? They'd love to know that you were suffering about it. So if you want to thwart your worst enemy, don't suffer over their done you wrong thing. Refuse to do that. So the idea is get rid of it. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, in all of that, how would you deal with like something like chronic pain, physical pain?
Probably not well. Even the Buddha. I mean, so you can't get rid of it, but yes, we do have, and I really think there should be people in this group in Victoria that should start a group called Dealing with Pain for Physical Pain, and you should have a little place, and those people who are in chronic pain, who medicine is not addressing, it should be exclusively therapy through loving kindness, and everybody should go there and just lie on their back on the floor, and somebody should just talk to them in the kindest voice and raise a sense of loving kindness, and you will find that it is so potent that even drugs which cannot touch this physical pain, this is the most powerful chemical in your body, love, and it will relieve that pain, like which other very powerful medicines cannot. And that's one of its benefits. It protects you from fire, from weapons, from poisons. Now, fire, weapons, and poisons is pain is fiery and poisonous as well. There's another type of course, pain, greed, hatred, and delusion are fire, weapons, and poison as well. It protects you from those as well. So it's a general analgesic, but it's so helpful to be with, you know, somebody who can talk you, because sometimes when you're in pain, you don't have the strength to do it. So the voice of another. It's very important to realize, to recognize that the value of the voice of another. Somebody can talk you out of fear. They can talk you out of all kinds of things into another space, and one of them is into loving kindness. Yeah.
Can you talk a bit more about the hindrance of small control food?
Yeah. Well, some of it's just fatigue, so sometimes we just need a rest. I know people come to the monastery and they're tired, and they sleep, and they attempt to disguise the fact that they have long naps, and then they finally come in and tell me honestly, I've been sleeping a lot, and so I say, good on you, you didn't come here to sleep, you came here to meditate, and you're surprised to find that you need to sleep. And that's the fact is that the way we run our lives in society is it just kind of depletes you to the bone. While you're running, you don't know it. And then when it stops, then you just feel drained. So it could be a sign that you're just draining your batteries all the time, and all you got to do is worry a lot or be anxious or any of these things just are constantly vampire drains on the battery. I speak in these battery terms because the whole monastery runs on batteries. I've been trained by these batteries, we're off grid, so in fact, yesterday, just before I left, the young man who was cooking came over. We were doing some outdoor work. He came over and said, the stoves don't work. Wow. And we looked for the fuse and this and that. And then we have a special button that turns off the stove. Even though they're propane stoves, they're not electric stoves. A special one that prevents the clocks on the stove from running because it takes 5 watts. But you'd be surprised, 5 watts mounts up, you know. So there's little programs running in there, running, 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 and then it's draining, 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 draining. So there, we have to look for the deep levels of fatigue, you know, and we really need to say, you know, life, I only have a certain limited time, and I don't know how much that is, but I know that it's a certain limited time, and I have to live. I don't want to get to the end of this thing and think, damn, I forgot. I was supposed to live, you know. So I really have to restore my sense of joy and joie de vivre, you know, the joy of life. And that's a great way to charge the batteries, to recharge the batteries. Yeah. So we can also give ourselves that. I did mention the fact that about death. So I was going to give you the five subjects to go to the forest with. I forgot one, right? You'd never caught me with that. I only give you four. The other one is death. Death. You're going to give the young monk the subject of death in case he starts frittering away his time. And then you say, you know, you got to remember you're going to die. It's not a theoretical exercise we're in here. It's life or death. That's all there is. It's life or death, and how are you going to make this as good as possible? Because that's one thing you can count on for sure. There's no question about that. Death. Urgency. Arising sense of life. Restoring life. You can be awfully tired. If we were all kind of, you know, we've been meditating, we're kind of in here, and you think, I just can't. I'm I'm so drowsy. And then somebody comes in with a gun. And suddenly, you're not drowsy anymore. You're wide awake, full of life, because death has just arrived. The urgency of life, and you're just electrified, because part of us is saying, I forgot that I'm going to die. So we have to remember we're going to die, and we'll be alive then. Yeah. I'm sorry that I did say yeah. I don't know everybody's name, so I can't say. Yes, Donna, whatever.
Christine.
Christine.
Yeah. On this issue of relating to challenging unskillful mind states, mm-hmm. whether you're with them, dissolving them, replacing them, I am one of those who have found it extremely beneficial in the last number of years of opening to some of those powerful mind states and giving them the space to move through. And so I've been trying to reconcile the teaching sort of that you're giving that say replace, dissolve. I know the sutta you're talking about, hammer it down, whatever. And I had a thought today as I was being with that, of these powerful emotions, which can be absolute raging hatred, deep grief, sense of abandonment and betrayal, really deep stuff, are not things that I've lived with that I have stories on. They are things that have arisen in my practice, that I had somebody, I think, that had huge protection for feeling emotions from a very young time, and as the mindfulness and the meditation have occurred, these quite powerful emotions will arise from time to time. And because there's not a story, there's not a lot of thoughts, which I think that sutta you referred to specifically is relating to thoughts, unskillful thoughts. And so I experience these emotions very powerfully and energetically in the body. They are very physical, and what seems to allow them to move through and to have some relief is, in fact, holding them in the mind state of compassion, spacious equanimity, and allowing the energy to move through, as opposed to, oh, I don't like this one, let me distract myself or do something like that. So I'm just wondering if you could...
Well, I mean, to hold it in the space of compassion is already replacement, so you're replacing it with compassion, right? So,
but how, I mean, they're absolutely still, and it can last for some time. I agree with you. I mean, the mind, the prevalent or the overriding mind state of that now is compassion, and yet within that compassion appears to be this energetic thing that, you know, if the mind just looks at it, seems to be raging hatred for everything in the universe, but it's being held in something much...
Yeah, so to, like, it basically, compassion is not fully developed. It's short of compassion yet, and because the anger is still there. They're mutually exclusive. They cannot fully function. So the compassion is not fully there. You can't be detached and angry at the same time, so we're not really observing our anger or anything like this. We're angry.
Is it possible that, in fact, as long as what I'm observing then is this energy or pressure or fiery thing, I mean, that can exist within a mind state of compassion?
No, I would say it's not really. It's heavily mixed, so it's not really compassion at all. What you're doing, though, is the beginning of it. So mindfulness is aware and not believing it. These mental states are emotional states. They get rolling, and you can't dismiss them, and you fail at replacing them, and then you try. If I keep this up, I'm going to have negative results in my life, and then you try to bring it down. These are the other techniques. try to bring it down in stages, so that what you're doing there is attempting to bring it down in stages. You're trying to introduce some compassion, which is slowing it down. You're going from running to walking, perhaps. But it's got so much momentum that you can't stop it. So you are looking for a technique to stop it, but it's got so much power that the techniques are not working, which is fine. Nobody said that you could just pull it off like this. But we're trying to. There's not really any benefit to just surrendering to sadness or anger. It's not beneficial in itself. But sometimes we're just not able to stop it.
Can I just put one more supplement on that? I find, and I think this has almost been inevitable, but probably it's been some time when it hasn't, that if I'm actually able to open to that energy, whether it's in meditation or if it's at home and I can sit down on the floor and let it fly through or give a wail and actually open to it and hold it with care, it lasts maybe a minute. And the problem, and then I'm fine. I don't have to talk about it. It has done its course.
Well, then, that's a good method for removing it. Yeah. Yeah, if
so
you're...
it is a removal method.
Yeah, and instead of being afraid that, you know, a split second of this, like Ajahn Sumedho said, you know, okay, yeah, feel it. Feel the anger, because you will feel that it's... you will be convinced that it's not something you want to live with. It has a convincing quality to it. other things like desire and everything are not good to do that with, because they feel good. They actually don't have their own built-in conditioner that makes you want to get rid of them. They actually have a built-in conditioner that wants you to keep doing that. So you're just looking for a technique to let it go. Let it go through you somehow, or etc. And they're powerful waves of emotions. And that will happen. And although we have five remedies for you, the Buddha doesn't say that instantly you will not have any hindrances anymore. You will get caught sometimes for days with these things, even if you're an experienced practitioner. See, that's because they have roots to them, so they're manifesting from time to time, but they have a fetter at the bottom of it. There is a permanent root down there, which only when you uproot that will those symptoms go away. It's like an infection that keeps coming back. It's just dormant there. And so we continue, especially when we're not in those moods, we still are working at the roots. We're trying to dig up the roots of this thing. And it's like a willow tree out there. It's just like coming back and back. Can't just cut the branches off. So, yeah, it's fine. If you have, the whole idea is like, it's not so clear in the West that there's anything wrong with anger. I mean, there's all kinds of teachings out there. You know, express your anger, use your anger, blah, 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 blah. And Buddhism is very sharply differs with that. It says, no, anger is a problem. It has negative results. You should aspire to get rid of it. It's a challenging emotion, though. And don't expect to just snap your fingers. But yeah, your goal is to find different kinds of fuel to function in your life with, except instead of anger and desire. There are different, much less harmful fuels that run your life energies on. Anger is quite strong motivator, but it burns your engine out. Well, sometimes it's quite often futile to try to talk to them and so forth. You have to know, is it, what's the most beneficial thing I can say? Sometimes it just, if you say, now there's no need to be angry, that just makes them angrier, you know. So there's sometimes there's nothing you can do. Even if you listen, it's not effective. It depends on how skillful they are. We have one thing, so out of this question, we have to understand something, that we're not responsible for anybody else. We're responsible for ourselves. We can do something for ourselves with this. But when I always get the question, I have a sister who is all screwed up. What can I do for her? I say, well, your sister's not here. When she decides to come here, I'll talk to her, but I'll talk to you, and let's see what you can do about this. Your sister's got to... other people are going to have to find their way with this. And maybe if you practice and you're really not shaken by another person's anger, they might be surprised. When the Buddha... Somebody, you know... So, first of all, you're not alone. Even the Buddha, people would come to the Buddha and get furious with him. And some descriptions of interactions, the angrier they got, the more cool and easy he became. His skin became golden, and he was just like, and they'd run out of steam in the middle of it all because he was just not reacting the way that any human does, you know, like he's just getting cooler and calmer and kinder. So they'd kind of blah, 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 blah. And sometimes they'd say, it is strange, Venerable, how are you? So he said, a Brahmin came and was very angry, and he said, if you invite somebody to a meal and they refuse the invitation, who gets the food? And the Brahmin says, well, I get the food. So it's just so. You invited me to partake of this anger. I refused the invitation. You get the meal. You get to eat your own anger. Why would I eat the anger? It's not good. So you're just leaving it with that. You can just refuse the invitation. You don't have to accept the invitation. So you just have to practice this ahead of time, that people can invite you all the time to join in their anger, but you don't like that. You don't like that anger, yeah.
Well, one of the things in the West that we say the value of anger is you'll know where your boundaries are, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's
what do you think about that?
Exactly why we need anger is in order to gain power. So we feel powerless, and only by getting anger can we assert our stuff. But of course, that's wrong. We need to learn that we can say these things perfectly well without using the fuel of anger. So people they don't know too many techniques. They only know, I'll get mad and then I'll shout. And if I don't know any other way, eventually I'll get mad and then it empowers me. But if you don't feel powerless to begin with, instead of that, and you see people who are quite functional, they don't need to be angry to tell somebody that, you know, this is not working out, etc. So it's like we admire that. So somebody is rational and not intimidated and so forth. And so we have to learn, I don't have to be angry to be not intimidated. So I can be brave, but without being angry. And that's why we want to find out these other fuels. And at first, when we let go of anger, we don't know quite how to deal with the situation, because that's our default mode. It's a primary mode. It's just like, it's our evolutionary mode. A cat gets angry, a dog gets angry, and people get angry, but we have the capacity to not get angry, and at the same time say, there's no reason that means I can't do anything. I can say what I need to say. I can do what I need to do, but I don't need to fuel it with anger. There are other things that work just as well or better.
So what about the other fuels?
Well, loving kindness and generosity and equanimity and clarity and all these things. So look at the mother with a child. So unskillful mother, and she's furious with the child shouting and everything. And the skillful mother is like, gets the same thing done, but it's just like, now, honey, you know, it's just, what if, you know, what would your friends think if you did that? And, you know, it's just other ways of working that are much more effective, actually. You see it in the political arena, too, you know, these kind of tin pot dictators are shouting, the streets will run with blood, and all, you know, it's like, you know, it's a little unnecessary, and usually it's never works out that way, just like, so,
there's a question over there.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Generosity, the instruction is to maintain and deepen.
Yes.
How do we do that without falling into a, you know, sort of a further narrative or grasping?
No, we can't. Don't be afraid to grasp at, to be attached to wholesome mental states. When we become, you know, fully enlightened, are we free of all attachments. Our spiritual aspirations are forms of desire as well, spiritual desire called chanda, and we need this. We have to move towards freedom by energetic striving, and it's a very delicious experience to feel loving kindness, and we will be attached. It's not something to be afraid of. So it's one beneficial attachment is to these positive mental states, and it's these beneficial attachments that lead to the end of attachment. Yeah, no, it's all right. With breath meditation, we can't use a narrative, but with loving kindness, we need actually a narrative. We can use our memory and our imagination. So if you ever thought that meditation's all like cancel future, cancel past, do not think, that's only one narrow part of it. The Buddha, he actually advises you to imagine, you know, imagine other beings and how they live, and remember your loving kindness relationships. Use your memory and your imagination, just but positively. Yeah. Yeah. And that's for tomorrow. So I think we're past our 4:30, so we will. Yes, thank you. Another synchronicity. Yes.